welcome
Steve
back.
Callis.
Indeed. We have coming up here on the phone lines our good friend Steve Callis. Welcome back to the FDH Lounge. Your dignitaries in residence here, Rick Morris, Walt Payton, and Elaine Tanko. And we have on the phone lines a good friend of the show, inducted as a dignitary some months back here on the program. Close friend of ours, a member of the 21st Century Media Alliance. He is a New York area lawyer slash blogger slash occasional sports talk show host. He's done some fill-in hosting work in NYC. Somebody who, as we always say, he's the guy that you want to talk to for anything at the intersection of sports, ethics, and the law. His very excellent site is Sports Plus by Steve Callis, also known as Callis Remarks. And he has a very excellent column up on there, which we're going to be talking about that with him, among other things here. I can only be speaking, of course, of our good friend, Steve Callis. Steve, welcome back
Rick,
to the program.
Hi, Rick. Good to be with you.
Great to have you back, buddy. Great to have you back. I want to get to something before we get into some of the topics we are going to talk about with you here tonight. That being, you know, you and I kind of had a discussion last night off air, and that segued. We were talking about the segment that preceded us here, one of our best of segments. Jason Jones, our senior editor, debating another one of our dignitaries, Ryan Isley, on the subject of the future greatness of John Wall. You were asking me last night on the subject of guards, and you know, how many of these guys can you really tell? How many of them, whatever? Going back to 2005, Jason sent me a list here on that very topic. And he's averaging, as I look at this, about a 2-to-1 hit rate on being able to predict these guys here. He's got them listed. He's got the ones where he was wrong, and the guys where he was right. And in the column of right ones, and I remember because it was when he and I first started working together, Chris Paul back in 2005. And I remember I said to you off air last night that that was one of the ones. So I do firmly believe there's not a whole lot of guys like this. Chris Paul's one of them. I don't even know that Darren Williams would have been one of them, because I don't think Jason or I – well, Jason was calling it to a stronger degree at the time than I was, but even Jason wasn't, you know, maybe saying he was going to be as great as he is. But Chris Paul, John Wall, et cetera, I think it's not as common for guys of that stature. By the way, John Wall may not be done growing yet. He could be 6'5", 6'6", by the time this thing's over. But I do think there are a handful of guys, Steve, that do disprove that and are the exception to the rule.
Well, I just have no recollection. If the conversation is, and it's a new one to me, if the conversation now is, and I've heard it in New York as well, John Wall is going to be a Hall of Fame guard, to me, that's a new conversation. Michael Jordan, you never heard that. Kobe, when he was drafted, and you probably know he was drafted 13th, never heard it. Iverson was drafted first the year that Kobe was drafted 13th. That's 1996. Never a conversation. So I think it's a different conversation on two levels, Rick. The first one is, I don't recall, say, looking at a draft pick, and as you know, as you said, Williams was picked before Chris Paul in 2005, but I have not been familiar with conversations, at least in New York, that start with, this guard's going to be in the Hall of Fame. The one I remember in the last 20 years is when Shaq got drafted. He was so dominant in college, and people knew he would be so dominant in the pros, which he was. And he's a Hall of Famer, of course. But to me, it's always been more about the big man versus the little man. You can go back to the early 90s to Kenny Anderson, the number two draft pick overall. He was supposed to be God, and it didn't quite work out that well. Now, people will say Kenny's 6'1", John Wall's 6'4", as you said, still growing. But I'm not sold on the fact that a kid has played 1 year in college. And if I could just be minorly critical, Rick.
Sure.
In the two biggest games of the year for Kentucky last year, that when they beat Cornell and then they lost to West Virginia, and I know it's only two games, but he was 4-for-9 from the field and 0-for-3 from three against Cornell, and he was 7-for-18 against West Virginia and 1-for-5 from three. Now, I understand his game is far beyond shooting, but if you have a guy who shot 32% from the college three for the season, well, next year he's going to be getting a lot of open jumpers from the three-point line, and to my mind it remains to be seen if he can make them. So that would be my first minor criticism, and don't get me wrong, this guy's a great player, not a good player, I agree. But again, to talk about Hall of Fame when a guy's in college, you never hear a college or AAA player in baseball ever being talked about in the Hall of Fame. Too difficult a sport. You rarely hear it in the NFL. This guy's going to be an instant star player or something, maybe. But Hall of Fame, I just think it's too early on two levels. One, to talk about a guard as a Hall of Famer. And is Chris Paul going to be a Hall of Famer right now? Maybe. I don't know. Do you know? I'm just not sure. And he's been in the league for a few years already. So that would be my complaint, A, to have the conversation, and B, to pin it on a guard, even a 6'4 guard.
I put Chris Paul in the but-for category. But for anything that would come up, he will be, in my estimation. Now, it remains to be seen the state of his knees here. I mean, is this going to be a situation where he kind of gets cut down a little bit in his prime? That would be a basketball tragedy, to be sure. But, you know, you look at somebody like Bill Walton, you know, if he doesn't go lame, you know, I think Bill Walton was in that but-for category also, particularly as Bill Simmons has pointed out in his excellent basketball book, that stretch 77-78, you know, if he'd sustained that a few years, if he hadn't gotten hurt, Bill Walton could have been in the conversation instead of being a guy, as you and I said last night off air, who is not in that conversation and not such a player. But it is interesting, and again, it tends to be big men who, as you said, do kind of get this height level of hype early on. All you got to do is look, Steve. You know, you're right there in New York. The frozen envelope that the Knicks got in '85 with Patrick Ewing, that was because he was being billed as the next big thing.
Absolutely. And was going to win, what, 5 or 6 NBA championships? I can't remember, Rick.
Yeah. Yeah, famous last words on that one. But, you know, unfortunately, I must say, we are learning in Cleveland the fragility of such assumptions and how things tend to go down like that. It's really kind of interesting. But, by the way, actually, let me do this here. Apparently, on this, I guess we can have a little three-way discussion here. Jason's on with us. So before we get to the other things we're going to talk about with you, Steve, let's get Jason's thoughts on this as well here. Our senior editor, Jason Jones. Jason, answer what was just said.
Well, I'm working on the delay here, but the reason I called a little early here, the conversation was never based around, is he a Hall of Famer? The idea is where does John Wall compare? And granted, this conversation is a new conversation in the last, say, 10 years. Because before, guys were drafted on what they did in college. Go back to, say, Michael Jordan, who was a solid player at North Carolina, won a national championship, and you had something to go on. And then you had guys coming out of high school like KG, where everybody said, wow, he's a freak of nature. Look what he'll be in 5 to 6 years from now. And now we're at the point where LeBron James, Dwight Howard, and now John Wall, look at how freakish they are already. And you can look at them, as we mentioned in the previous segment you played there, I don't care who they're playing against. I don't care if he's playing up against toddlers. You can see what they do and know how well it translates or not. And we can go back and forth all day long about trying to dictate where exactly he fits in. But the bottom line here is whether you're talking about West Virginia, Florida, Tennessee, who went very far in the tournament, the guy can play, and he can play now. And that's the big difference. I'll go back to one that I didn't hit on unconditionally. I was hesitant on Brandon Jennings. Because when you watch him play in Europe, you go, well, I don't know. He doesn't look like he's that great against these European players. And then he comes out, and he's averaging 25 points a game in the first half of the season. So all I'm saying is, ultimately, you kind of have to look at him in a vacuum, the absolute value of a player, if you will, and say that, sure, it's always going to be, let me see him prove it first. But you don't have to be a basketball analyst expert on the subject to look at the kid and go, I'm sorry, but he's going to be good at the NBA level, and he's probably going to be good right away.
Well,
now, he'll probably go to a really bad team, and he'll probably have to start.
Virtually all big man. When you talk about Howard and LeBron, these guys are physically dominant. Now, will John Wall be a physically dominant guard in the NBA? Maybe.
No, but see, that's exactly the point. It's an apples and oranges thing. So on one hand, you have dominance, physical toughness, durability to rebound and mash up, whereas on guards you're looking at quickness and agility and court vision. Both are completely tangible ideas.
And again, for all the guards you can name, including Jordan, you know the thing about Jordan. Dean Smith was the only coach who could hold him under 20 points a game. So even though he was drafted third and viewed to be an excellent NBA player, nobody thought he would be an instant, he's going to make the Hall of Fame. And I don't think people really thought he was going to be the dominant player he immediately became. He needed help 7 years, Scottie Pippen, to get some championships, but he was great far before that. But again, at that time, nobody was having these kinds of conversations. They just didn't exist. If Jordan came out today, maybe they would exist, but they didn't exist back then. That's all I'm saying. These
guys in the 1960s, no freshman ever played either.
Games in college or 30 games in college. He's a superstar in the pros. I just don't know if that's true. You got to see how his game translates. You and Donnie Walsh didn't believe. Donnie Walsh could have drafted Brandon Jennings for the Knicks, but nobody believed. But when you go to Europe now, which is something that's happening more and more, there's more of a conversation about, can I live in a foreign country where they don't speak my language? And it struck me as Brandon Jennings' biggest problem was adapting to the lifestyle over there, because he certainly had no problem over here when he played in the NBA.
Well,
I guess ultimately my big issue with this is, it's entirely too convenient for me to sit back and say, well, let's wait and see. I want to actually look at it, make comparisons, and see how they pan out. And I think if you do that and you allow yourself to be fallible, you'll see that it works out more often than not. I mean, you know, we can make all those comparisons from before, like with Felipe Lopez. Felipe Lopez was not a special player. He was nice. And, yeah, he was killing guys at St. John's, but he wasn't LeBron, Kevin Durant nice. He wasn't Kobe Bryant nice, even. And I think that's
frankly,
the difference is we can look at John
Lopez
Wall.
Wasn't killing many people at St. John's. He was killing people at Rice High School, and that was the difference back then. He wasn't a great player at St. John's. I don't think he'd be categorized as a great college player. But when he came into St. John's, he was viewed as he was going to be the top player in the country. And, of course, that didn't pan out near as much as they thought it would.
Right, but because he wasn't a special player. We can look at John Wall and say he looks like a special player. He can do things that Felipe Lopez never could do. And maybe that's the evolution of the game. I don't know, but there's a reason we're having the conversation now and we weren't having it 10 years ago.
Yeah, but again, that's not because there weren't great players 10 years ago. That's because this is the way, with not even the best players in the country in college anymore, except for the freshmen, because they're all gone to the NBA. You've lost the top 20, 25, 30 players in college basketball for the last decade. They're all gone. None of them stick around for 4 years. There's no more Tim Duncans anymore. So
that's true, but I will respectfully disagree with
college.
The idea that the conversation couldn't have happened before. It didn't happen because nobody gave young players that level of respect. Nobody would have looked at a young Magic Johnson and said, you know what, next year when he's in the pros, he's going to start and he could lead them to an NBA Finals championship. No one would have said that.
I don't know. I can tell you, I went to the same high school
as
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar went to, and I can tell you in the 1960s there was talk that he could leave high school and go right to the NBA in the 1960s, and he had to go to UCLA and play freshman ball. He couldn't even play on the varsity. So it's not like there wasn't a ton of talent that was unrecognized. Bill Walton the same way when he was in high school, and they pretty much followed each other. They had 1 year in between. But again, it's always, to my mind, been mainly about big men, not about guards, because I think it's tougher for the great guard to be great than it is for the great big man to be great from just a physical perspective.
Okay, I can accept that. The problem I think we're basically agreeing.
I mean, the question is, it was posited to me as a Hall of Fame question, and I can tell you they're having that conversation in New York. I can tell you Mike Francesa went on and said, this guy's going to be a superstar in the NBA, John Wall. I've seen him play. And I think he might have even mentioned Hall of Fame. I'm just saying, while you say it's convenient to sit back and wait and see, I say that's kind of the way it works in professional sports. We can have all the predictions. You can watch the NFL draft day all you want. You have no clue whether those guys are right for 1, 2, 3, 5 years if it's a quarterback. You have no clue, no matter what you say. In basketball, it's a little different. That's why I think baseball is the hardest sport to play by far over these sports. Nobody's walking out of high school and impacting in Major League Baseball.
Well,
it's
that's
not
really
happening.
True.
So, yeah, we can have the conversation, and it's fun. But I don't think it's necessarily convenient to sit back. You'd like to see the guy play a season in the NBA. You've seen Tyreek Evans. You've seen Derrick Rose. You've seen O.J. Mayo. They're very good NBA players already. Brandon Jennings. Are these guys Hall of Famers? I still don't know. Maybe you guys have a better feel for that than I do.
Well, the Hall of Fame discussion is even coming for me, sounds a little outlandish because there's too many factors that can happen once they get there. But I don't think it's a stretch for even just an avid sports fan to look at Derrick Rose in college and say, that guy's going to contribute and be a fringe all-star from day one. Or that Dwight Howard, as physical as he is, and that's the big man argument again, but that he should be pretty impressive right away. But, yeah, Hall of Fame is ridiculous because there's way too many variables.
Maybe I was misinformed on the whole topic, but I can tell you they're having that conversation in New York, too, and I disagree with it there as well.
Right. But, I mean, I'll say that, though. I mean, I will say Hall of Fame in the case of these guys, as I said, but for something coming up. I mean, John Wall, unless he falls in love with Coke or blows out both his knees or whatever, if John Wall keeps his head on straight and is healthy, I'll call it. I'll say he's going to be a Hall of Famer, and I'll take my chances on looking like an idiot. I'll say that.
Rick, then let me pose this question to you. This is an all-time great for Sports Talk Radio.
Okay.
I'll throw a name out there who's, I guess you could say he's probably finished, but doesn't have any rings. Is Allen Iverson a Hall of Famer?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
See,
yeah.
Now this is where we have to decide, because if you're going to have the is he a Hall of Famer discussion, in professional sports, rings comes into it too much when comparing young guys. So if we are to assume that he puts up the kind of numbers I think he can put up in the NBA and be the defensive matchup that he is and all these various aspects and just take rings out of it, I'd be more likely to say, sure, he looks like he's got the potential to be a Hall of Famer. He should be a Hall of Famer if all goes well, not considering rings. You start putting rings into the discussion, and there's a lot of guys out there that would be deserving of the Hall of Fame that wouldn't get in.
No, I agree with you, and I wouldn't even count rings in terms of Iverson. If you're a borderline guy, maybe, I would say this. If you're a borderline player, then rings do come into the conversation. But if you're Allen Iverson, at least in my eyes, and I'm a New York guy who watched the Sixers forever, it's not a conversation with Iverson. People might not like him, but as a player, you know, to me, him and Tiny Archibald are the two greatest little guys of all time, and I think Iverson is a Hall of Famer.
Well, you know, it's amazing how some of these, you know, segments can just kind of evolve here as we're going along here. We've basically been able to carry over from the first segment with what we've been doing into this one. You guys have had a good back and forth. Before we get to, Steve, the LT stuff that I wanted to talk about and get your legal thoughts on here, since we got both you guys on, since you're on the East Coast, Steve, and you, Jason, are, of course, in Colorado, let me see if you guys are in agreement on this or if you have different points of view, because we always talk ethics stuff with you, Steve, and I'll throw it to you first. If the Phillies are stealing signs from Colorado and Major League Baseball has ascertained that they are and gave them a warning, thoughts on the propriety of that, yay or nay?
You'd have to tell me how they stole them, because stealing signs is 100 years old. We know the 51 Giants. You know that whole story with Sal Ivar sitting in the back of the Polo Ground. So I wasn't aware how they were stealing them, but it's an age-old issue in baseball. People try and steal signs all the time.
Binoculars from the bullpen, apparently, so they're not using video aids. You know, it's, again, like you said, it's as old as the game itself. It used to be, you know, in the scoreboard, they'd have stuff buried in different parks. Again, I don't think it's that big of a deal. Jason, what do you think? It's happening to your Rockies out there, so what do you think?
Well, right now, it's my opinion, even without Rollins in the lineup, the Phillies are just a better team, and if Colorado's, you know, crying wolf because they needed a little extra push, well, shame on them. And just to sort of piggyback the it's baseball argument, this is baseball, and it's the whole if you're not cheating, you're not trying thing from day one. Now, corking a bat, taking roids, that's one thing. But you know what? If Colorado's tipping their pitches, so to speak, well, then good for Philly. I don't know. I mean, to me, I am a sports fan through and through, but this is the kind of thing that I chalk up to. It's part of the game. You know, there's a human element. If they're getting signs, fine. I'd like to think that it's more of a tipping their pitches as opposed to premeditated binoculars in the bullpen. But either way, I don't think I'm terribly offended by it.
Okay. All right. General agreement on that. Jason, if you want, you may want to stick around to hear this. I know we got you in the next segment, but this stuff with LT here, this is going to be really good. The take that Steve's got on this, again, from a legal perspective here, and he's got the column up at stevecallis.com. This legal road ahead here, Steve, it's something where there have been some media personalities out there, legal folks who, let's just say, are more famous, have a better name value, or, you know, as far as that goes, higher Q rating, but shall we say a much more tenuous grasp of the law than you. There's a lot of misinformation that's being perpetrated here. You are trying to set the record straight on Lawrence Taylor and this situation and the fact that it's not all the same what he's been accused of here. So, in the eyes of the law, if he did some things, it's different than if he did other things. I'll let you elaborate on that.
Well, the law is very specific in New York. And, again, we all love sports talk radio, but this isn't in New York should Jabba start or should Jabba relieve. This is what's the law. And for guys to get on the radio in New York and say, and I'll say this is as nice as I could say it, to have regular sex as we know it or some kind of oral thing or something else, these are all covered by different laws. If you don't have sexual intercourse, the normal man and woman as we know it, generally speaking, then there's no rape, no matter how old the kid is. If you have something done orally, that's a totally separate crime under another statute. If you charge LT with rape, and he did not have sexual intercourse in the normal manner as people know it, as the law knows it, he'd be acquitted even if he had some kind of oral thing with this girl. Now, you probably heard today the new defense. Have you heard it, Rick, out there? Because it's all over the papers in New York today. And that is Lawrence never touched her. He just pleasured himself while watching her. Now, that would be even a different crime. That would be endangering the welfare of a child, which is an A misdemeanor in New York, coupled with soliciting a prostitute, which is a misdemeanor. And I know how it is out there in Cleveland versus the suburbs. In New York City, that's a different deal than 40 miles north of the city in Ramapo, New York, which is Conservativeville. They would even try and get this guy if that's all that happened. And let me just inject here, you know, TMZ reported, and it's been admitted now, that a used condom was found in the room.
Right.
Apparently LT's going to say that wasn't his. So there's a lot of leaps of faith here. But whatever happens, at a minimum, he's in big trouble for what he's essentially already admitted on two misdemeanor counts. And in the Daily News, the New York Daily News today, the girl came, was interviewed by the New York Daily News. They found her and interviewed her, and interestingly, she was happy to talk and said, oh, man, he's full of baloney. We definitely had sexual intercourse, and there was a problem with the condom, and I hope this isn't too graphic, Rick, but
yeah.
She said he, and it was in the Daily News, so he literally had to pull it out of me.
Okay.
So it's kind of hard to believe that a 16-year-old girl is going to make that kind of story up. And even if she did, at a minimum, this guy's looking at two misdemeanors with 1 year of jail time for each. And I'll say it again, up in conservative Ramapo, we're not in Brooklyn, New York, or Manhattan in the city. Up in conservative Ramapo, he might get 2 years if that's all he did. But he's looking at four if it was rape. Frankly, he's looking at four if it was anything oral. They're both Class E felonies. And he's looking at another 1 year for soliciting a prostitute. So I'll say it again, as I wrote in the column, he's in a heap of trouble no matter what his lawyer says.
Well, you know, and let's set the record straight here. Let me just Class E felonies, not classy felonies, just so people hear
right. I apologize
no.
if I didn't pronounce it clearly
enough.
No,
that's fine. I just wanted to set the record straight on that. And then yeah, you got to love the rookie lawyer that he must have, that thinks that exposing himself and then doing something with his rod in front of a minor, like, that'll get him off the hook. Like, there's nothing wrong legally with that. But it's, you know, it almost makes you wonder here, you know, it sounds like they're setting up a defense of, you know, this masturbation defense that he's going for. You know, what's that going to be boiled down to in the courtroom? If he didn't shoot in it, you must acquit?
Well, I guess they're examining the condom now to find out what the evidence is. If the girl's telling the truth, of course, her DNA will be all over it as well, and this will be, frankly, you know, an open and shut case. I mean, that'll be a huge problem for him. If he's telling the truth, and to my mind, he's still looking at being convicted on 2A misdemeanors, and I'll say it again, in New York, that might get you 3 months. But up in Ramapo, north of New York City, more conservative, that might get you the full 2 years. So no matter what's happening here, I think he's got a big problem.
Well, you know what, too? An LT, he's got such an ego, and he's such a dumbass. That condom, if it turns out to be a Magnum, how do you know he's not going to be like, okay, yeah, all right, I did it, it's mine.
Well, it's almost Bill Clinton, deny, 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 deny forever until you're absolutely caught red-handed. You know, there's no blue dress here, but there is a used condom, so we'll see eventually what that holds.
Well, it's very important you're making these points here in your column on your site here, you know, which we've got a link to off of our rundown here tonight at thefdhlounge.com, as well as the regular link to your site. It's important you're making this point here tonight and in the other media appearances that you've made and in your column that you've written because, again, the nuances of this thing matter in the eyes of the law. And as you said, jurisdictions as well, different things in different jurisdictions here. But that's ultimately what's going to determine what happened in this situation here, you know, as far as what's going to get visited upon him. When it comes out in the wash, as I'm sure that it will, what exactly did he do? And we know he did something, and he himself now is admitting that it's just a matter of degree. What did he do? And then that is going to have a lot to say about, you know, what happens there. And I assume, you know, this being New York, I mean, you're probably looking at mandatory minimums for some of these things, are you not?
Well, actually, for the rape 3 charge or even the oral charge, there is not a minimum. It's a 4-year maximum, but there is no minimum. So it's a little bit different than, for example, the Plaxico case where you were looking at mandatory minimums. Having said that, I'm happy to say to you, when you go upstate New York, and again, you're not talking the liberal city now. You're talking the, you know, you probably have the same thing in Cleveland. You drive 30, 40 miles out of the city, and you've probably got some conservative suburbs up there. That's what you have up in Rockland County, up in Ramapo, which is above, it's New York City, the Bronx, then Westchester County, then Rockland County going due north. What you have up there are very conservative people. So I would say to you, there's kind of an implied, if you will, mandatory minimum. This guy's not walking, even if the story is the way he told it. He's not walking. That's not happening up there.
Well, you know, and these are the nuances that end up coming into play, you know, in a situation like this. And it's a thing where ultimately, and you would know better about this than Jason and I because, you know, you live in the market. You've been out there. But it seems to me that the media over the years, you know, they've given him this kind of, you know, charming rogue type image here. Oh, that LT, what'll he do next? Oh, look at what he said in his book about hookers and drugs and everything like that. I mean, ultimately, it seems to me that if you don't take seriously the type of image that a guy's got in a thing like this, you know, with the way that his life's been going, you know, he's ultimately accountable for his own actions here. But it seems like nobody ever holding him to account for anything that he's ever done, you know, might have, you know, played a part in this earlier and might have stopped, you know, this underage girl from getting violated by him.
Oh, I think you're totally right. I think there's no, and look, I'm a huge Giants fan. I'm a huge LT fan. But for years, I think people looked the other way. He had his drug problems. He had his tax evasion problems. He's got a pending hit and run down in Florida still. He's always been, like a lot of other athletes, though, Rick, in a lot of sports, he's always been the golden boy, the gifted one. And, yeah, people even in New York the day he got arrested were saying, oh, he's not really a violent guy. He's really a nice guy. He does a lot, you know, he's matured now over the years. He hasn't touched drugs in 10 years, blah, 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 blah. But, again, the crime is the crime. And even if he thought, you guys probably know this, even if he thought she was 19, as she supposedly told him, or 25 or whatever, that's no defense to the crime. So the similarities between Plaxico and LT is that they're both strict liability crimes. If she's under 17, and in my column I wrote about that now, they said she's a Spanish girl from the Bronx. And we know from Little League Baseball, this is kind of a sick segue, but We know also from professional baseball, a lot of these guys have false birth certificates. I'm sure someone for the defense team, if she's not from the United States, if she's from New York, she has a birth certificate, obviously. But if she's from the Dominican or some other country down there, maybe there's a phony age. I think part of the best defense would be to go find where she's from. If she's not from New York, if she's from a foreign country, check out down there, because sometimes you don't get your birth certificate until you're 4 years old. You know, the old Cuban pitchers are legendary, right? How old really was Louis Tion? How old really was El Duque? These guys were all older than that. How old today is Jose Contreras? So there's some interesting issues there that I think might help him. But the facts as they are now, to me, he's got a huge problem. I assume the prosecutors have already figured out, proof-wise, how old she is, because they have to present that to the grand jury. That's an element of the crime. Were you under 17? I don't think they can just have her say, yeah, I was 16, especially if she lied to Taylor and said she was 19. I think they have to show, here's your birth certificate, she was born in Queens or something.
I
or
love
Brooklyn.
It. Even minus the LT angle, there's still a sports tie-in here, El Duque style, about falsified birth certificates like El Duque and everything else. So, well, just to bring this full circle, Jason, you've been listening to this here. You've heard this whole thing getting set up. You've given some thoughts over the years here on the program and in other forums here on the network about, you know, moralism in sports and everything like that and the way that people look at stuff. What thoughts do you have, Jason, on the way that people have kind of, you know, looked the other way, winked at LT over the years and everything like that, and how it may have contributed to where we are now?
Yeah, the sad thing is I as you know, Rick, I almost try not to pay attention to the news so much until it has the kind of staying power that gets my attention. I had not heard of the voyeuristic LT's defense is going with. That's blowing my mind, actually, that somehow they would deem that to be better. I don't know. And I was having a conversation with my wife about this, who really doesn't know who LT is, and if I said revolutionize the pass rush, she would just look at me cross-eyed. And sort of without understanding the context, after having a conversation with her, we both collectively came back with the idea that Pac-Man Jones gets in a fight in a strip club, okay, chalk that up to he's just a spoiled athlete. Travis Henry has 100 kids by 90 different women. Okay. A person gets charged with rape or endangering a minor, if I heard that correctly.
Right.
You just don't look the other way on that.
Yeah.
Traffic violations, even drug use to some extent, if the guy's just stupid, like, who is the cowboy lineman who got caught with a couple pounds in a van? I mean, come on, move to a non-extradition country. Don't be such a retard.
Yep.
But I don't care how good LT is or was. If any of this sticks, you can't look the other way. And I know it sounds like I'm trying to look at it from both sides of the coin, but I don't know. Maybe it's just me. I can accept that some of this stuff is stupidity or people weren't raised right or whatever, but there are certain offenses you cannot look the other way on.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And for me, like Plaxico Burress, that's just stupidity. Yeah, he should have had a gun, and I hope he's remorseful for it. But I'm sorry, what Plaxico Burress did is not on the same level as what it looks like LT may have done.
Well, it's becoming clear that there was definitely a real victim involved in this here. And, you know, of course, much like the thing with LT, I think that the best coverage anywhere on the whole thing with Burris was what Steve was able to provide in his various forums here with stevecallis.com, making the New York area media appearances. It's always a bundle of fun to have you on here, Steve. We knew we were going to be talking about the LT thing, but I love how these things can just come out of nowhere. I mean, You and I didn't anticipate this, but you and Jason ended up having a real epic kind of back and forth impromptu here on this whole subject of, you know, when guys get to a certain level. And this is the kind of stuff that we really love. But, you know, this is what I really love is being able to go inside of things like that and really take a look and break it down and look at examples. And, you know, that was a tremendous spur-of-the-moment thing you guys were able to do, Steve, as well as your LT breakdown tonight.
Well, it was great to speak with Jason. I mean, obviously, he's incredibly knowledgeable. I think it's interesting, and, you know, hopefully we'll be able to talk over the next few years to see how it pans out, because I find the whole thing fascinating myself. But, again, I've always viewed it more as a big man versus little man kind of analysis, and maybe it is changing now. You know, we'll find out in the next few years.
Oh, it's going to be real fascinating to see how it goes, but always a pleasure to talk about stuff with you here. As I say, everything is at stevecallis.com. You've got your columns there. You've got media appearances, occasionally cable TV appearances. Anything else we should be mentioning, putting out there, Steve?
No. I think I'm actually going to write something on horse racing. I'm a big horse racing fan this week with the Preakness coming up. I've got some interesting thoughts on that, so I think I'm going to go that way in the next day or two.
Okay. All right, we'll be looking for that, and be sure to lobby for them to keep it at Pimlico, Steve. We don't need them yanking it and putting it elsewhere.
I totally agree. The finances are bad down there, but you're right. They should definitely leave it there.
Exactly. Don't screw with history. Steve, always a pleasure, my man. We'll definitely have you on again soon, buddy.
Same here, Rick. Good to speak with you, Jason. Have a good night.
All right. Yep. One of our dignitaries, the great Steve Callis, our good buddy.